You've tried water, you've tried soil, but what if I told you there's a sleek, mess-free way to propagate your houseplants that actually will boost your success rates? And it's not even marketed for plants. Today, we are diving into the surprising power of Fluval Stratum, an aquarium substrate turned propagation powerhouse that might be the answer to your propagation curiosities. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Hello, plant friends. My name's Maria. I'm here to help you care for plants and grow joy. And I am so excited to be talking about a pretty high-level plant nerd moment today, Fluval Stratum. If you're curious about propagation and maybe taking your propagations to the next level, I am so excited for you to listen to this episode. I'm joined by Lindsay Sisti. She is all the plant babies on Instagram and the author of The Ultimate Guide to Houseplant Propagation, which is a new book. And she loves Fluval Stratum. She's known for her step-by-step tutorials, her honest science meets real life approach to growing plants. And in this book, there was a whole chapter on Fluval Stratum. And as I was reading it, I was like, I got to get Lindsay to come on and talk about this, because a lot of people are using Fluval Stratum right now. It got really popular in the pandemic and nobody really knows what it is. So I wanted to kind of pick her brain about it. Lindsay has unlocked a whole new way of using it for clean, efficient, and successful propagation. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned plant parent curious about new techniques, this episode is going to give you practical tips and a fresh perspective on how to grow your green family for free. Welcome, Lindsay, my Fluval Stratum girly.
Thanks. Hi.
I'm so excited to nerd out with you today on something that I feel like really only started getting talked about like in the last couple of years. And now you hear these crazy stories of like fish stores being sold out of Fluval Stratum because all the plant people are going and buying it. So you're kind of a propagation extraordinaire. How did you become the plant lady behind all the plant babies?
Well, first of all, I am so honored to be on this podcast. I have been listening to it from the very beginning of my plant adventures. When I first started off with plants, I went to a local plant shop just to meet you.
And I remember that in 2019. Yeah.
I was geeking out and I was so excited. So this is like so full circle for me to be on your podcast now. And that was really at the beginning of my plant journey as a plant mom, when I was trying to emulate my parents who were big plant people. And I really wanted to start collecting more of the more difficult to grow species. And I really became fascinated with aroids in the beginning of my journey, and alocasias, specifically alocasias and anthuriums, and some of these trickier plants that seem to die easily. I'm not sure why I was drawn to them. I guess the challenge, and also, actually, I do know why I was drawn to them, just because they are so damn beautiful. Sometimes the more beautiful the plant, the more they make you work for them. And so as many listeners would probably agree, even calatheas, which are now classified as goperdias, same thing. You're so attracted to these gorgeous plants and then you find out they're so difficult. So I collected all these plants, and that was when I met you, and I kept buying them. And then I started documenting my journey with these plants on Instagram. So that's when all the plant babies started. And the unfortunate thing is that I would kill a lot of these plants. And I was documenting my journey back then of growing them, killing them, giving advice. Mm. Not so much me preaching that I was this master of plants, but that, you know, hey, this is the real deal. Like, this is what I've learned from the experience of growing, experimenting, failing, and then trying again. And so as my account grew, and people came on that journey with me, I became better at growing plants. And as they became better, my plants started to live. And that's a great problem, but it's also a problem because when you're used to buying more and more plants and you just have that hobby of going to the plant shop all the time, and then your plants start to live, well, then you have a jungle because your plants then get bigger and bigger and they're not dying anymore. And so what do you do with these tremendous monsteras that you're like, wait a minute, well, usually, typically you would be dead by now, but now you have turned into a tree.
Mm.
And that anthurium that was a tiny seedling now is a literal bush. And so you have to do something about this situation. So I began to propagate. And that is how I kind of became a self-proclaimed propagation princess, because I really have trouble throwing away any plant tissue because I constantly see every little bit of plant as a potential new plant. And I would take a cutting, propagate it, and then I would say, okay, I'll give this away to a friend. And then I would, but then I'd also make like three other plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd keep those and then they would grow into three other bushes. And so here I am, kind of like the old lady in a shoe with so many plants, she didn't know what to do. And I am all the plant babies. I have a an online shop that grew out of this because I had so many plants, I had to start selling them. I mean, I only have so many friends to give them away to. Actually, a lot of my friends are like, Lindsay, no more plants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've given us, we cannot take, my friends' husbands actually have bans on me giving them plants because I've given them too many. So I started an online shop, which I've had for a few years now. And I started hybridizing plants, which is creating plant babies by pollination. So I create new species of alocasias and anthuriums. I got so deep down this propagation rabbit hole that I eventually wrote a book. So now I am an author as well. I hope that explained my story.
Yeah. No, because, it's one thing propagating a pothos and, taking some cuttings, putting it in water and, having it root and planting it up again. But you're like pollinating stuff. Like, you're taking propagation to the next level, and your book certainly does that as well. So what is it about propagation that is so appealing to you? Is it, it sounds like a part of that is waste. Like, you don't want plants going to waste. You like
right.
the joy of sharing plants. But mm-hmm. something in me tells me you're a bit of a nerd too, in that it's fun to see roots grow. It's fun to put something in the dirt and see it sprout.
Yes. And when it comes to hybridization or pollination, it's really getting into the nerdy science and creating something new. I mean, to put it in the most simple terms, you're fiddling with genetics. You're looking at a mommy plant and a daddy plant and essentially seeing all the different babies that mm-hmm. you can make. I mean, I'm a mother and I have three children, and I'm just so fascinated to see, each of my three children are so vastly different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm constantly, and I'm very into genealogy as well. Like, I'm the person in my family that keeps all of the family trees back to the 1800s. It's a very big hobby of mine, actually back to the 1500s on one side. Genealogy and tracing where genetic traits come from is just something that I'm very interested in humans. And when I realized, wow, I can transfer the same passion into my plant hobby, it was like a light bulb just went off in my head. Like, I can take a mommy anthurium and a daddy anthurium, so to speak. They're not really male and female plants in that way, but let's call them mommy and daddy. I'm breeding them together, and then I'm getting, 100, sometimes 200 seeds, and each one of those babies is completely unique.
Mm.
I get the beautiful but weak ones. I get the strong, robust ones, but that don't have a lot of color. I get the ones that just die off immediately. I mean, just like in nature, sometimes human babies, unfortunately, are not viable. So you see the same things that we do in humans as we do with seedlings, the strong, robust to the weak. And it's amazing to see nature play out in our own plant collections.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what is fluvostratum and why has it gotten so popular when it comes to propagation in the last couple of years?
Okay, so fluvostratum. Okay, those are two very separate big questions, and I could go on and on about it because I just love fluvostratum. Okay, what is fluvostratum? Fluvostratum is, well, it looks like little black caviar, if you were to take a look at it. And that's what really caught my eye in the first place. I said, what is this stuff that everyone is sticking their cuttings in? It looks like caviar, but it is not. It's not fish eggs. What it is compressed volcanic soil. It's actually volcanic tephra. And when I first saw that word, I said, what the heck is tephra? Tephra is essentially anything that a volcano spews out. So it can be volcanic ash, it can be rock, giant rock, or little pebbles. So it is volcanic tephra that comes from a specific volcano, and only one volcano in particular, and that is the Mount Aso, A-S-O, volcano in Japan. So there is one, I know this is so, when I learned about this, I said, this is the most random thing. Like, you're going to tell me that everyone is using fluval stratum and it all comes from this single volcano in Japan and nowhere else. Like, I don't know. I thought that was so random. You just imagine it coming from multiple sources. Mm-hmm. But I imagine like just everyone migrating to this like one, taking this big, you know, holy trip to this volcano, all these plant lovers and scooping up this magical fluval stratum. But so this volcano is one of the largest volcanoes in the world, actually, and it's still active. And it last erupted in 2021. And in the foothills of this volcano, I have not seen it personally, and there are no pictures online that show the actual fluval stratum. But somewhere along the foothills, there is this lush layer of this volcanic soil and fluval stratum. So fluval stratum, I'm not sure how it is, if it comes already compressed in the little balls or if the companies then compress it into the little balls, but it comes from this volcano. And it's really comprised of these two type of rocks, andesite and rhyolite for geology nerds. And this is what fluval stratum is essentially. So to sum it up, it is soil compressed from the foothills of the Mount Aso volcano in Japan. It is a soil. It is not a rock, but it has, you know, these volcanic rock-like composition. So when you're using it, when you're touching it, it is soft like a soil. So you can squish these little pellets between your fingers. So it's not to be confused like a hard rock like Lachusa Pond. You can't really compress it. Well, stratum, if you took a little piece of that caviar-looking caviar-looking piece of fluval stratum and smushed it, you can smush it because it is compressed soil.
Okay. What makes it so good for propagation?
Well, the reason why it's so popular is because it works. It works so well. Just on a very basic level, if you pop some cuttings in fluval stratum and propagate the right way, I should preface it by saying use it correctly, your cuttings are going to take off. And people are just amazed by the results. And I'm amazed by the results personally that I've seen using this substrate versus, say, sphagnum moss, which prior to fluval stratum was like my bestie. I mean, I love, love, love sphagnum moss. I also love using perlite. But fluval gives better results. And I will tell you why in a second. The other reason why people love fluval stratum is that it's very accessible. You can, unlike, say, Lachusa Pond, which always is out of stock. Now we don't even know if we can get it anymore because it's being sold in Europe almost exclusively now. So there's a lot of manufacturing or trade issues. We're not quite sure what's going on with Lachusa Pond. But fluval stratum, like you said, is available in all pet stores. It can be found on Amazon, so it's very easy to order. But in terms of why it works really well, there's a few really major benefits to it. First of all, fluval stratum has, because it has little, or it's made up of little pellets, there is room for oxygen to get between each of the pellets. And when oxygen gets between substrate, just like when you're using LECA or you're using perlite, that allows roots to transpire. It allows for more growth in the root zone. So that's why anything like compressed mud is never good to propagate in. You want something that's light and airy. So just the structure being these little balls is beneficial. That's number one.
We spend so much time nurturing our gardens, plant friends, but when's the last time we protected our own lives, right? At 34, I was diagnosed with melanoma from sun damage, and I never imagined that a few extra hours in the garden could be so dangerous for sun exposure. And now I know better, which is why I'm wearing a lot of Coolabah these days. Coolabah is the world leader in sun protective clothing. Their UPF 50 plus fabrics block 98% of UVA, UVB rays. The pieces are lightweight, breathable, and actually cute. It's sun protection that you wear so you're not constantly reapplying sunscreen that you basically immediately sweat off the minute you start weeding. And it's really cute. I originally got a lot of my Coolabah pieces for gardening, but I find myself wearing them every day. I'm literally wearing one of the pieces that I record this episode for you today. They have sets. They have really cute cover-ups. They have really cute hats that you can use in the garden, but that you can take elsewhere. Speaking of hats, a wide-brimmed hat in the garden is a must. Do not wear a baseball cap because they leave your ears, your neck, and your cheeks exposed. And that's where I got my melanoma. So I've been wearing the Brittany hat a lot by Coolabah. It's stylish. It comes in so many colors. And I love that there's wire in the wide brim of the hat so you can kind of shape it so it's not just flopping all over your face. And when you're in the garden, please don't wear a tank top. Cover your chest and your arms. Coolabah makes that very easy with their really technical sweat-wicking materials like their Active Athlon, their Air, or their ZNO fabrics. It makes full coverage effortless. I reach for their Devi long sleeve fitness tee all the time, particularly on hot days, because I find it to be very cooling and sweat wicking. Honestly, more comfortable than being in a tank top in the garden. And I wear their Lumalia zip-up hoodie like every day. And it comes in a matching set, which is awesome. Please, 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 plant friends, protect yourself this gardening season. It's Melanoma Awareness Month. I've partnered with Coolabah to make sure that gardeners understand the importance of sun protection. Get 25% off your order on Coolabah on their website, Coolibar.com, with code GROWINGJOY25. That's Coolabah.com. Use code GROWINGJOY25 and make sure that you have effortless, easy protection in the garden that wicks your sweat and keeps you protected so you can really thrive this growing season.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
What if I told you that container gardening could actually be so easy for you this spring and summer? What if I told you, plant friend, that you could plant up herbs, tomatoes, cucumbers, and flowers, and then essentially forget about them for a week? Seriously, this is what I did last summer. I used Crescent Garden's True Drop self-watering planters, and I had a glorious garden bounty with them. They made my garden harvests almost inevitable, even with the tons of summer travel and life events that I had that got in the way of my ability to water my tomatoes every day. Last year, I leveled up. I swapped my gross grow bags out for the Crescent Garden True Drop planters, and it changed my gardening game in multiple ways. Number one, the self-watering feature allowed me to fill the containers only once every couple of weeks, so my plants stayed perfectly hydrated even when I had to travel once I left for 10 days and my plants were fine. And the second, the Crescent Garden container aesthetic is so much better than my grow bags. It was such an improvement. They come in a variety of sleek styles and colors. My entire set of Crescent Garden True Drops are in this beautiful terracotta color that looked so beautiful on my balcony. And three, they have a raised bed option. It's called their Nest model. And if you're looking to not break your back this gardening season, this is a fabulous answer to your problem. Plant friends, I want you to take the stress out of watering this season and take advantage of this amazing discount that Crescent Gardens is giving us. So for Growing Joy listeners, you can get 15% off your own True Drop self-watering planters for a limited time with code GROWJOY15 at checkout. So you're going to go to crescentgarden.com/growjoy and use code GROWJOY1515 at checkout and get 15% off. You will not be disappointed, plant friends.
The other reason why it's beneficial is just because it's absorbent and porous. So it's going to absorb the water, it's going to absorb the nutrients, and then release it back. Third reason why it's so beneficial, and this makes it really unique compared to, say, perlite, is that, or even LECA, is that it has a buffering capacity, meaning it will lower the pH of the surrounding water to be slightly acidic. Now, the general houseplant enthusiast is like, what does this even mean? Like, I've never checked the pH of my plants. Doesn't really matter. However, it does matter to a lot of plant species in that in order to absorb macronutrients, NPK, that's your fertilizer, right? You have your nitrogen, your phosphorus, your potassium. In order to absorb those nutrients optimally, typically, especially for aroids, want to be in that around 6 to 6.5 pH range. And fluvial stratum, for whatever reason, lowers the water to that range. So it's interesting because when, especially when you're growing anthuriums, a lot of anthurium growers will use this, like a little bit of acid to lower, it's called pH down, to lower, especially hydroponic growers will lower the water in semi-hydroponics to be lower the pH of their water. Mm-hmm. But fluvial stratum will do it for you just naturally. So when your cuttings are taking off in fluvial stratum and the roots are just growing crazy and faster than they are in others and responding to fertilizer better, there's an actual scientific reason. They may just in fact be taking up and absorbing those nutrients faster than they would in a perlite because the pH is more optimal.
What about LECA versus fluvial stratum? Because LECA to me just looks like a larger ball of than fluvial stratum.
Right. LECA's great. LECA does have, you know, it's larger, it's more coarse. So it does have more air pockets. It might be a little less expensive, but it's not going to have that pH buffering capability. So it's not going to change the pH of the water to 6 to 6.5 like fluvial stratum will, because fluvial stratum does come from, it has that special unique properties because it comes from the volcano. And also one thing I didn't speak about that's different is that because it comes from that rich volcanic soil, it has trace minerals and micronutrients in it. Not a ton, but it is rich in iron, which is a micronutrient for plants and helps with chlorophyll production. So it is going to give your plants an iron boost. So it has a little bit of an edge in terms of minerals, in terms of pH, and then it has all pretty much the same benefits as LECA would and perlite would.
You sold me on fluvial stratum. I get it. It gives you the edge. It's got the micronutrients. It's got the right ratio of air to water. How do I propagate in fluvial stratum? I'm actually holding, now this is an audio interview, but people who are listening, Lindsay joined me on an Instagram Live a while back, and we did a propagation of some of my Hoya with fluvial stratum, and I am very happy to report that I have lots of roots in my fluvial stratum. So I can say, you know, firsthand that this fluvial stratum thing really does work really well.
That's awesome.
So how do you propagate in fluvial stratum?
So the other day I was in an anthurium Facebook group and I was saying how much I love fluvial stratum. And inevitably there were a few people on there saying like, I don't like fluvial stratum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I shouldn't use a bad voice. Like, I don't like fluvial stratum because fluvial stratum haters are not bad people and they don't have bad voices. They're very sweet people. They're just misunderstood, perhaps, because if you hate fluvial stratum or you did not see good results with fluvial stratum, there's a good chance it's just that you were letting your fluvial stratum dry out.
Okay.
And truly, that's probably the only thing that you could have done that made you a fluvial stratum. Well, there's two things that you could do to make you a fluvial stratum hater. One is that you let your fluvial stratum dry out and therefore the root system of your plant dried out. Mm-hmm. And then the whole cutting process, the whole rooting process went kaput. So it's similar to sphagnum moss in that you want to keep the fluvial stratum damp the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a mason jar that's filled with fluvial stratum and I've kept the bottom third of the fluvial stratum covered in water as per your instructions. Yeah.
Perfect. And what I tell people too is that, and I've experimented with different levels of moisture in the fluvial stratum, truly, fluvial stratum is so forgiving. You can keep the bottom third of the container filled with water, or you can keep the bottom half,
Or honestly, you can just keep the whole thing filled with water. I've seen it done always, but when you're propagating in fluvial stratum, typically one of the easiest ways to do is to start off with a jar. Let's just say you have a mason jar, any jar with a closed bottom, and you stick your cutting in and maybe leave 2 inches on the bottom and put, you know, just, or maybe don't put your cutting in yet. Pour 2 inches of fluvial stratum on the bottom, then stick your cutting in and fill the remainder in with fluvial stratum. So you have just a little space on the bottom for just fluvial stratum. And even if your cutting touches the bottom of the jar, that's okay too. Fluvial, again, is so forgiving unless you let it dry out. Mm-hmm. And you don't need a drainage hole either on the bottom when propagating in fluvial. You just don't. You could have a drainage hole. Mm-hmm. You could, as long as you don't let the fluvial dry out. So if you don't have a drainage hole, just keep an inch or two of water on the bottom of the jar. If you do have a drainage hole, you're just going to have to water more frequently to keep the fluvial moist.
Because it's the moisture that the fluvial needs to be moist in order to give the roots. The roots need air, but the roots also need moisture to grow. So it's that moist fluvial stratum is the key to creating the perfect conditions for the plant to root really successfully.
Exactly. And I have not seen, at least in my experience, and I'm sure there'll be someone out there listening that says, no, I've seen it. So I'm going to say, in my experience personally, with the hundreds and hundreds of plants that I've rooted in fluvial stratum, I have never seen a plant get quote unquote overwatered in fluvial stratum. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a different type of substrate. It's not like muddy, compressed soil. There's a lot of air pockets. It's porous. You just keep it moist. And you will know when it starts to dry out too, because it goes from shiny and black to kind of a grayish, dry looking color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then just totally add water.
I even just I'm looking at my jar that I have, and like the bottom half is shiny and the top half is dry.
Right.
Which is interesting too. So what about, so I've propagated this Hoya that we propagated together. I'm going to plant this up soon because we almost have enough root branching. Can I reuse fluvial stratum? Like after I take this Hoya out, can I just pop new cuttings of a different plant in?
Absolutely. I mean, I reuse my fluvial because fluvial stratum is, and I should also make note that fluvial stratum, fluvial is just the brand. So stratum is the product, fluvial is the brand, and there is a couple other brands on the market. So Aquion makes stratum and Xterra just started putting some out as well. So you could price shop and it all comes from the Mount Aso volcano in Japan. So look around, but yes, absolutely, as long as there was no root rot, because root rot does stem from bacteria and that could spread to other plants. Absolutely reuse the stratum because that stuff's expensive and there is no problem reusing it. However, it will deteriorate over time, especially, and you'll notice it. I mean, it's not like a set time period. The more you use it, the more you handle it, you will start to notice that instead of those nicely formed balls, it will start to smush and squish and become more like a muddy dirt. Once that starts to happen, again, you could still technically use it, but it's just not going to provide as much aeration for your roots. And you might notice the health of the plants decline over time. After, a good rule of thumb is after a year, you'll want to replace the fluvial. Or when you start noticing a lot of algae build up on it, which you will see from keeping it wet all the time, you'll want to replace it.
Okay, so I have gotten inspired by this episode. I've taken one of my plants. Well, number one, are there certain plants that do really well rooting in fluvial stratum and others that don't? Or if I want to propagate any of my houseplant collection, I can do it in fluvial?
Honestly, I have not seen a single plant that does not root well in fluvial stratum.
If you're doing alocasia corms in fluvial, are you doing the same thing? You're just setting the corms on top of the fluvial?
I stick the corms almost all the way into the fluvial, but until you can only see the Hershey Kiss-like top sticking out.
Interesting. Like bulbs, almost. Like, yes. You know, if you were forcing bulbs. Oh, that's so cool. So say I have a general houseplant. Let's choose a philodendron, you know, whatever your basic, or let's choose Monstera. I want to propagate a Monstera and I'm putting it in fluvial. what am I looking for that propagation before I take it out, right? Because we're not putting plants in fluval forever. We're rooting them in order to then pop them up in soil. So what are your recommendations for growing in fluval? What should I be looking out for? What will the process be?
So first of all, I don't recommend necessarily, especially for a large plant like a Monstera, that you propagate straight into fluval because fluval is expensive and that's a large plant. So I definitely think you should use fluval, but what I'd recommend is cutting it a little bit with some perlite.
Okay, so you're making a substrate of fluval and perlite. Got it.
Just add some chunky perlite because you'll still get the same benefits of the fluval and you'll still get the same results, but add some perlite to kind of make it a little less expensive, lighter on your wallet, and it will extend the life of your bag of fluval.
I love
so,
that.
So especially when I'm using these big plants, because I have a lot of big monsteras that I'm propagating, I'll cut it even 50-50 with big chunky perlite. So I'm still getting that like pH benefit and the micronutrient benefit. And if anything, it's adding some big chunky air pockets, which those monsteras love. And then I'll use a, you know, a big vase and I will do the same thing. I will fill a couple inches of this perlite and fluval mixture on the bottom, stick my cutting in, and then fill the rest up with the fluval and perlite. And then fill the bottom few inches up with water, set it in a bright, warm, sunny location, and then wait until the roots of your plant are roughly 1.5 to 2 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, someone asked me recently in a propagation workshop, they said, well, how will you know? What if you can't see it? How can you tell if your roots are that long? I said, well, unfortunately for my husband, that's when I go around emptying these jars of fluval stratum all over my kitchen counters to pull my cuttings out. And he's like, Lindsay, what are you doing? This is where I'm cooking dinner. And I'm like, sorry, I have to check my roots. How will I know, you know, priorities?
And propagating in clear, like I have mine in a clear mason jar. That's helpful too, because you can see through
it. Yes.
And also it's helpful with the water level too. Like I'm looking right now and I'm like, actually, I could probably put some more water in mine.
Yes.
Okay. So you're looking for 1.5 to 2 inch long roots. Are you looking for root branching as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, looking for those secondary roots. So not just like one primary thick root coming out, but like you said, like the branching, when it looks like little branches coming off, those secondary roots coming off, that's wonderful. But truly, most important thing is 1.5 to 2 inches long. I personally like to wait until they're like 2 inches long. I find the most success with most plants before transferring it then to a different substrate.
I love that. Okay, cool.
Okay, so you know how in spring everything starts to feel lighter? I switch my hot coffee to my iced coffee. I start drinking more smoothies. I try and align my food with the fresh fiber and energy of spring. Well, one of the biggest supports for these swaps that I make to still make them delicious is Manukora honey. You've heard me talk about them on this podcast. I'm obsessed. I use it almost every day. It's my secret ingredient in my morning iced coffee and in my smoothies. So I make a dupe of the very well-known brown sugar shake an espresso from a well-known barista. We won't name names. You take a spoonful of this rich, creamy honey by Manukora. You add espresso or coffee, your milk of choice, and ice. You shake it up so it gets frothy. It is so freaking good. Or I drizzle it over a smoothie bowl, or I put it in a smoothie. And honestly, in the middle of the afternoon, I will take a spoonful of Manukora honey and just eat it. Eat it right off the spoon, raw, for a midday energy boost. But Manukora honey isn't your average honey that you get from a honey bear. It's ethically harvested from the remote forests in New Zealand, and it's packed with powerful nutrients that support your immunity and your gut health. It has 3 times the antioxidants and prebiotics of regular honey. Plus, it's tested for potency, so you know exactly what you're getting, and it has never been easier to try Manukora honey for you plant friends. They are offering us a great deal. You can go to manukora.com/bloom to get $25 off the starter kit, which comes with their 850 plus Manukora honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, which are low key amazing for a weekend away, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. That's Manukora, Manukora, Manukora.com/bloom for $25 off your starter kit. You will not be disappointed. As much as I love the idea of growing and harvesting my own berries, plant friends, it has just never worked out. Birds get to them, the squirrels beat me to them, and honestly, it's just not worth the effort. But I still want the homegrown, fresh off the plant, juicy berry flavor. And so my gardener cheat code is keeping a bag of frozen Washington red raspberries in my freezer. Did you know that 90% of America's frozen red raspberries come from multi-generational family farms in Washington state? These berries are grown with care in rich soil, harvested at peak ripeness, and frozen immediately so they taste like they were just picked. You can even pretend you just picked them from your own garden. You might have caught the taste test I did with my husband on socials, but oh my goodness, Washington red raspberries are so flavorful. My husband will literally eat them right out of the freezer. I have been putting them in my smoothies and in my breakfast yogurt bowls. They're perfect in the bag. Like, each berry is so perfect in shape and taste. It's unbelievable. So if you want to use my gardener cheat code for fresh from the plant berries, look for frozen Washington red raspberries in the freezer section at stores like Kroger, Meijer, or Winco. Just make sure that it says product of the U.S. to make sure that you're getting the real deal when it comes to Washington red raspberries. If you want to meet the farmers behind the berries and find out where to buy them, you can go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. Is there, you know, a while back, everybody was into semi-hydro, passive hydroponics. Is there a way, like, can I use fluvalstratum as the growing media if I wanted to grow in semi-hydro? Can I keep my plants in fluval instead of repotting it once those roots get 2 inches long?
Yeah, you know, people do. People grow using a semi-hydro setup, which is essentially like a self-watering pot with a wick. And instead of like lechuza pond, they will use fluvalstratum. I don't grow that way because I will use a lechuza pond substrate for longer term growing in my self-watering pots. And I reserve the fluvalstratum mainly for propagation in jars. But you certainly could do that. The reason why I don't do it is because self-watering pots are expensive and I don't like to change things out a lot. And I mean, and by a lot, I mean, if I could keep something in its pot for a couple of years, I always say that, but then I always end up like having to repot it anyway. But when I pot something up, I tell myself, this is going to be in here for a couple of years. And so with lechuza pond, at least I'm giving myself that chance that it will be in there for a couple of years, because lechuza pond is essentially a bunch of rocks that won't deteriorate.
It's harder. It doesn't break down as fast as it does. Okay. So
fluval
makes more sense for a season instead of a lifetime.
Yes. Because it is going to break down. By a year, it's going to get a little muddier.
Got it. And then is there a recommended amount of time? You know, I think so many people struggle with propagation of when to pop the cutting up and like how to not leave the cutting too long in water or too long in this, too long in that. Do you have recommendations for like an amount of time that you shouldn't keep a cutting in fluvalstratum for too long so that it wouldn't successfully transplant? And do you have any transplanting tips for putting your cuttings into soil?
That's a great question. That's kind of why fluvalstratum is so awesome. And it's one of the biggest questions in the fluvalstratum group, is because people notice that their plants are thriving so well in fluvalstratum that you don't want to take it out. Because here, I mean, I have this beautiful oxalis triangularis that, I mean, it just took off and is blooming in this cup of fluvalstratum. And honestly, I didn't take it out. Like, I mean, it was there just so that the bulbs could sprout, but then it just formed this gorgeous bouquet. And I said, I can't move this. I mean, I risk it kind of going into shock and all the little shamrock, beautiful purple shamrocks just curling up. It's just such a sensitive little thing that I said, and I gifted it to my mother and she kept it. I think she still has it in the same cup of fluvalstratum and it's gorgeous. And there's no way I'm going to move it. And so a lot of people will keep their props in fluvalstratum. But what the feedback has been from people generally that do that is after about a year, you will start to notice either a slight decline or a stagnation like a slight stagnation in growth. And I do believe that's either due to lack of fertilizing, because again, a fluvial stratum does not have the proper amount of macronutrients. So you still need that NPK. You have to still fertilize.
Mm-hmm.
Once your plants have roots, you need to add fertilizer. Once your plants have roots, you will need to. Not right away, but once your plants have roots, add that NPK. But either that's why people are seeing a decline. And two, it's because, again, the structure is deteriorating and you're getting less oxygen between those molecules of dirt. And therefore, you're not getting enough aeration for the root zone. So you might have to change out the fluval.
And when I do get that two inch long root and it's time for me to pot up my fluvially rooted cutting into potting media, do you have any tips for people to have a successful transfer? Because obviously fluval and potting media are two very different things. Those roots are used to the fluval. So how do you graduate to a potting media successfully?
Okay. So the beauty of transferring a cutting from fluval to a chunky soil mix, as opposed to something from water to a chunky soil mix, is that the roots have already adapted to a solid medium in fluvial stratum. So you have soil-like roots already. So they're going to recognize a solid medium when you transfer it. So you're not going to get that much shock as you would if you rooted in water. And then you get water roots, and which are smoother and have less hair on them. And then you transfer to soil and you see a lot of plants get shock. And to reduce that shock, I always recommend placing your plant in like a humidity chamber to help support the plant during that transition time. But when you're transferring from fluvial to soil, it's a pretty seamless transition because it already has developed roots, which are used to a solid medium. So it's solid to solid. However, to reduce shock of any kind, especially when you're dealing with very sensitive plants, you have those very finicky alocasias or something like a very thin leafed begonia, you can always place your plant temporarily in a propagation box, a grow tent, any kind of closed, clear plastic container, just to keep the humidity at around 100%, 80 to 100% for a few weeks after transplanting, just to give the leaves that extra support while the roots are adjusting.
Got it. Amazing. Have you ever done those experiments where like you take the same style of cutting and you put it in fluvial and LECA and perlite and water and see?
Yes, actually, I have not done that experiment with cuttings with fluvial, but I've done a couple extensive experiments with anthurium seeds, comparing its growth or their growth in fluvial stratum versus aeroid mix versus tree fern fiber versus sphagnum moss. Because in the past couple of years, growing anthurium seeds has become so popular. And germinating these seeds in sphagnum moss and tree fern fiber has been very popular. Oh, and peat moss as well is very popular and the most conventional method. And then fluvial stratum came to the market. Well, it's been on the market for aquarium use for a while, but in the plant hobby became so popular, I really wanted to test whether the seedlings would grow as fast or faster using this volcanic substrate. And I was blown away by the results. I was blown away by my initial experiment because the seeds that were in the fluvial stratum grew faster, and the seedlings themselves, once the seeds took root, were bigger and more robust.
Wow.
And of course, it's all about sample size. So it's a smaller sample size. And like I mentioned in the beginning, when you're growing and seedlings, every seed is unique. So I thought maybe these are just the strong babies. Maybe I was just happened to pick the strong kids and the weaker kids got the other substrate by coincidence. So I repeated the experiment using hundreds of seeds. I mean, it was just a very massive experiment and over, I believe it was a month time. And it was pretty big and controlled and all the seeds were in the same environment. And there was no question that the fluvial stratum was the winner in terms of the seeds sprouted faster. Well, and once they sprouted, they just took off so much more quickly than in the other mediums. And it followed quickly by a sphagnum moss and the tree fern fiber, but there was no contest. So since then, I exclusively use the fluval stratum.
I need to have you back on for an anthurium seed pollination episode, because that sounds like a whole nother deep dive. But this was so fun. I mean, thank you personally for introducing me to fluval. I've never used it before, but because of this Instagram live we did, I ordered some on the internet. The wrong type. It's been super fun. And I'm excited to, you know, your bulb situation. I'm like, oh, I have a bunch of daffodils. Like, maybe I'll make a flower arrangement with some daffodil bulbs and fluval and see if they sprout. But anyway, this has been so fun. You're so knowledgeable. You're such a nerd. Also, it's been so, I mean, we've known each other for so long. So it's full circle for me too, having met you so long ago and now having you on the show. Where can people find you and where can people find your book? Tell us a little bit about your book, because you've got propagations on propagations in that book for anybody who, you know, was excited and stimulated from this conversation.
Definitely, definitely. Well, you can find my book anywhere. Most places books are sold. Amazon, Target, Barnes and Noble. It's the ultimate guide to houseplant propagation. And in it, you will find how to propagate everything from a simple pothos cuttings to how to pollinate. It's actually the first book ever to describe how to pollinate your own anthuriums and make these babies. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
And there's lots of corny plant jokes. So if that's your thing, check it out. And yeah, you could find me on Instagram often making those same corny plant jokes, unfortunately. For better or for worse, that's who I am. So I'm all the plant babies on Instagram and TikTok. And my website is alltheplantbabies.com. Basically, it's all the plant babies everywhere, all the time. So
everywhere, all the time. Well, you're a delight. Thanks so much for being here and nerding out. Thank you, Lindsay, for this really interesting conversation. She's so knowledgeable. She's such a plant nerd. I love talking to her. She's awesome. Go check her out. We have links to her book and her socials in the show notes. And if and when you propagate in fluval stratum, you let me know. I have some fluval stratum science experiments going on right now on my windowsill, and I'll keep you posted. All right, plant friends, I hope this sparked your curiosity in an effort to always help you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully.
After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.